Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, November 24th, the year 2000. And this morning in the fireside is a forum entitled Unplugging the Christmas Tree with Janet Grant, Molly Archer, Heidi Cryer, and Beth Stewart. The forum number is forum 2000-27.
I'm Janet Grant, and this is Heidi Cryer and Beth Stewart, and we expect Molly Archer to come and join us, but she's got to get things in the polish for the that leaves in 45 minutes or so, in an hour. And so she'll be here. The four of us are going to help facilitate the conversation today around unplugging a Christmas machine. I know that maybe some of you have done some thinking about this before. And we just want to share today some of the resources that we have and talk a little bit about why we would do some of the things we might do and how we can be more consistent in our Advent and Christmas and Epiphanies so that we can live lives that feel more in tune with who we are. As we begin, I thought it would be good to just say names again. I'm starting to get lots of names, but maybe some others haven't. And name and where you're from, and maybe something about why you came to this particular session. And why don't we start? Why don't you start?
I'm Beth, and I'm from here now, just recently. And I am happy to sort of share this. We did a workshop from that book, Unplugging the Christmas Machine, last year in our church, and it was so meaningful and really helped us shape sort of what we wanted our Christmas season to be like. So I'm really happy to share ideas and have people give me more ideas on sort of how to make this season meaningful.
I'm Heidi, also from here via the west side of the mountains. About 5 or 6 years ago, we started doing a series of years where, out of necessity, we had to simplify our Christmas. Surgery and moving. And out of that was kind of a looking at what truly is meaningful and what truly is good for us in our Christmas times and what is stressful and not good and not helpful. And so it's fun to continue to grow on that.
And I'm Janet, and that's truly it. You never arrive, I don't think. And I've been thinking about these sorts of things probably for 20 years and have done lots of forums and sessions where I have helped people talk about simplifying Christmas or talking about whose birthday is it anyways, those sorts of things. And Holden, the gift of being able to live at Holden for as long as I have, which now is, I'm in my 10th winter at Holden, has really given me a gift of a sense of Advent and how I want to be at this time of year especially.
I'm Elaine from Tacoma, and we have lots of stuff because we've never moved. We have lots of Christmas stuff, and I think I'm interested in making sure that we meet the needs of all the generations in our family now, not just focus on the two-year-old, but also just everybody we connect with during that season, different ages and stages.
I'm Stacy, and I've lived here for the past 2 years, and as I've experienced a couple of Christmases away from my immediate family, I found all the more of a need to create ritual and find some definitions of what I see for the season and who I can make those or share those rituals with and participate in. And I'm trying to think of new and creative ways that I can from a distance, celebrate these things with my family. And I'm struck by it, Holden, how we can do a lot of things together that don't cost money in the present moment. Maybe we spend money to get here and stay overnight here, but the dance didn't cost anything last night, and the Bible study that, or the talent show that will happen. And so what are these organic activities that we can do where people from all different backgrounds can come together on a pretty even playing field? And I think this holiday season is one place where we can focus on that. So.
I'm Todd from Minneapolis, and I grew up with many, many, many traditions. My mother loved to celebrate Christmas especially. I think we had it 5 or 6 times during the month of December between St. Nick Day, St. Lucia Day, Hanukkah. Each one celebrated, you know, with the wooden shoes or the whatever it was from that country. So I have a long history with the idea of tradition and kind of rites of passage. I mean, I was looking at the book and it's talking about rites of passage, and it's not very well read. So anyway, taking that, then the other half of it is, Tracy and I got married 2 years ago, actually prior to being married, and having a marriage service, we made our one unifying purpose was to simplify life. We had both had in our past things that had gotten out of control and too complex. And so now our first thing that we think of on any decision is, how can we simplify it? It wore this, will this make it more simple? And so, to kind of marry those two, the number of different traditions that I've grown up in and simplifying Christmas, and just interested in getting more ideas about the Christmas season.
I'm Tracy, and I'm from Minnesota. And I've struggled for years to try and keep Christmas meaningful and less commercial. And that's a continuing challenge. Try to keep it simple. And
I'm Lawrence Rood from Forks, and I've been to Janet's class quite a few times. See what's new.
These guys.
I'm Everett from Ephrata. Interesting, you know, I'm here to take in everything that Holden has to offer while I'm here. And this means one of those classes. But to turn off the Christmas machine, and it always strikes me that, and so as they're older, remember that Christmas never started until 2 weeks before Christmas, the commercialization part when I was a kid. You know, and now it starts before Halloween. You know, and in our society, I mean, we can simplify our lives, which we need to do. But I don't know what we do for society. You set an example, but it's, you know, when you have the big commercial dollars out there pushing hard, it's hard to simplify it. It's hard. It's a hard machine to fight. Let's put it that way.
I'm Nancy, and I'm from Ephrata. I've loved everything everybody has said. Maybe I could share one thing that we do in our church. We've done it for maybe 5 years. This year it's December 10th, and it's an Advent fair. And we have all these booths in our fellowship hall, and different people share their craft, their project, with supplies for others to make and take. And hopefully, you know, they're simple enough that they could take and make, you know, more of them if they want to get them to more people. It's a way to put Jesus back in Christmas.
For those of you who've come in, we just say our name and where we're from, and just a little reason why we might come to this particular session. Catherine Gig Harbor, I'm also on housekeeping, so I might have to leave. The toilets might call, and so I have to go. Between Martha Stewart and who can find unbelievable things to do, and some of that, you know, I have to say, is okay. She's brought art back to homemaking and that sort of thing, but it does get a bit excessive. And I think that anything I can do in my life, for my family and for my congregation, to just raise awareness that we're about creating community and not supporting America's economy at Christmas is good. So I know the book, love the book, but I don't know 117 books, which we have before us. So.
Well, catalogs of goodies.
Yeah.
Word of all.
Word of all.
And Melanie from Wenatchee. I too have been to Janet's class, only once, Lawrence. Enjoyed it, and we do consciously try to unplug the machine. We like to try new ideas to that effect, so that's on her.
I'm John from Wenatchee, and I listened to, I didn't get to come to class the last time, so I took care of Merritt, and I thought the ideas sounded good. We worked on some of those. I'm anxious for more. It's so difficult to move in any direction that's countercultural. And we start talking about Christmas, and it's amazing how we separate church and state, we separate all these other things, but when it comes to Christmas, that's about as American an institution as you can.
That's right, that's right.
And it just kind of blows me away, but that's where we are. So just looking for ideas.
Well, I'm George from Tacoma. My perspective is that when I was in college, my older brother got married. His wife's family insisted that he come to visit her family for Christmas every year. That was a big deal for them, which meant that Tim was never with us, or was never going to, at least for the foreseeable future, never going to be with us, with our family, for Christmas. And so my parents just sort of say, well, you know, Christmas, will, what's in the day? We'll have Christmas when Tim's in town. And that first year, we had Christmas a week early, and which meant that all the hubbub of trying to get the Christmas presents purchased and wrapped and everything was done and finished a week before Christmas. I mean, Christmas was over that part. And what was left was that last week before Christmas and Christmas itself, with nothing except Christmas to focus on, the real Christmas. And it was really just wonderful. I always sort of look back to that, and you know, never been able to recover that, but it was a particularly nice year.
I'm Kathy, and I'm from Tacoma. And I'm here because the world keeps coming in on me. You know, you fight the good fight, and you think, you know, we're going to make this a Christmas of the week. And I remember those Christmases when my husband was a student and my brother was a student. And so we had to depend on our own resources. And I think even more than that, I remember as a child, there was a blizzard in Tacoma. And my mom was a widow at that point, and with my grandparents. And I remember sitting in a circle, and my mom telling me that it was not going to be a very big Christmas because they hadn't been able to work. So everything we got that Christmas was made. And my mother, in her later years, we were talking, and she asked me what my most memorable Christmas was, and it was that one, not the one where I got everything. And so that's what I want to bring back. I want to bring back the real meaning of Christmas and family.
I'm Bob from Tacoma. And I heard what you were saying over here about simplifying things, and we're at the stage of our lives right now where we're looking at, talking about the world coming in, looking at simplifying lifestyle all the way around. And I've heard the term downsizing and all that type of thing. I've combined it to be simplicizing. And you know, you talk about Christmas in particular, thinking back on prior Christmases, like George was saying, with the two different families, we had my family and then her family and then our family, and Christmas from the prior year, gift-wise, seems like it's natural for it to be topped each year from the prior year.
Yeah.
And that has gotten into just an outrageous spiral. And a number of years ago, we've changed some things there, and they're about ready to change again. So, here for ideas.
Introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Stella, and are we saying why we're...
Why you came to this session? Stella lives here.
Curiosity got me. I do media ministry, so I was recording it, so I decided to come in and get a hands-on experience with it.
Good. Well, we're going to just do that, and I have done this session lots of times. Huh? Come on in. And I'm really thrilled to have a couple of other folks who've done some things, too, to help with it this time. And actually do most of it, so let them take over.
Thanks, Princess. I'll start with the background here.
We'll need pencils for this.
Okay. I'm gonna pass on an inventory, and I don't have enough for everybody, and I can make some copies, but if we could do some sharing and
maybe couples could share.
Yeah.
Always telling you that couples do it separately.
Yes. You can put one line on each side or something.
Yeah.
Right. In general, people ask the holiday season to do too much for them. We want a lot of stuff from our holidays, and it's not possible for us to get. Physically not possible for us to get that much out of the holidays. And so this exercise will kind of tell you what is it that is most important for you from the holidays.
We can share the door.
And so if you'll take these, read down these values. Read down the values. I will be getting some more. So read down this list of values where there's little marks. If there are some that have nothing to do with you, cross them out. If there is something that's missing, a value for you that's important for the holiday season, add that in and then rank these. It's very difficult for us to make changes if we don't first take a look at what is important to us and how are we going to go about making changes. And so if gift giving is extremely important for you, that's going to make a difference versus if it's very low in our priority. So take a look at that. You guys can both have it.
This is a way to start looking at what is most important. And not trying to pack so much into the holidays, which we tend to do because there are so many things that are important to us. And unless we take a look at some priorities, there's some people who would be willing to share maybe either insights that you have and taking a look at that, or some of what your top items might be.
So many of the statements made me think that we're trying to do so much in that short amount of time that I started editing instead. Mm-hmm. They're a reminder to help me to do this throughout the year, not just 30 days.
Okay. I mean, if someone were to look at my list, they'd really think I was a house. But number 10 for me truly is to help those who are less fortunate. Because for about 3 or 4 years, our family tried to do food kitchen, you know, serving the food kitchen lines and that kind of stuff at the holiday time, and they're too full.
Yeah.
There are too many people doing it during the holiday time. So we started taking a look at, we need to do that as a family some other time. So I like that editing. And it's not that I'm saying that's not important, just for the holiday time.
You're callous, you're hard-hearted.
I know. I am.
But there's no food.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the same that I looked at this line, like, oh, the holidays are a time to be a peacemaker and strengthen bonds with relatives and strengthen my church community are like the last things on my list. And the same thing, like hopefully you do that during the year so you can enjoy those people during the holidays. But it looks callous, you're right.
I found a tension between like the reality or like ideally it would be nice to be able to just spend time with friends and family, but then being the peacemaker also and knowing that the holidays, as joyous as it might be in the present moment for me, might be very tense and very painful for someone else that's close to me. And so trying to celebrate, but also be mindful of the person sitting next to me, who might be my aunt or my best friend or my next door neighbor that is grieving or dealing with some other struggles that finding, sometimes it's hard to be festive without being a peacemaker also. So.
For Lawrence and Melanie, doing this again, and for me too, I have to have a lot of sheets from a previous year, and we were laughing, I said, oh, we should date it. So I put 2000 on the bottom of the one that I have here. And as I look at this one from some time previous to 2000, 1 and 2 and 10 are the same. And now it's kind of shuffled around. So I feel good about that as I reflect on it. It's like, well, there's a couple of things that are pretty consistent, and the other stuff kind of shifts and changes with the particular year or my life stage.
That's what I found too. There's top ones are using, bottom ones are using, middle ones are all, you know, I need to come in.
One of the things that about the Christmas machine, as the book talks about, is a problem that people are finding is what we are trying to escape is from the commercialism of Christmas, of what the marketplace has taken over on Christmas. So you start taking that away. They have a really nice quote in the old book, I don't know if it's the same in the new one, about a woman who says it has become a time where you cook the meal, and while she's cooking the meal, or a couple of other female relatives of hers are cooking the meal, everybody else is watching television or reading magazines, they eat the meal, and everyone goes home, and we need to find things to replace. If we take out, we've lost a lot of the things that not so many years ago there were to do during the holiday time. Games that were traditional for families to play, or discussions you always had at Christmas time.
Caring for animals.
Right. A lot of things. Are there things that you think of that are important traditions within your family that replaced it?
Well, there were a couple. My mom was great on traditions. One of them I remember through the Advent season was the nativity scene, of course. Baby Jesus was never there, but in addition to that, wise men, you always had, it was a game to try and figure out where the wise men were going to come from this year. And they would show up in some far corner of the house one day, and each day they'd move a little bit closer as they traveled through the house until the day after, a few days later after Christmas, they
showed
up.
That's clever.
Yeah. That was one of our fun ones, and getting to be the one to move those along. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what the other thing was I was going to say.
What did you do with Nicholas? St. Nicholas?
St. Nicholas. If I remember, I guess the wooden shoes. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of European tradition.
Yeah. But, somewhere my mom dug up enough wooden shoes for a family of seven And she put them outside our doors. We put them outside our door when we went to bed. And in the morning, we would find a small gift, a little bit of candy or something like that. And she never did put sticks or coal in them. She threatened a lot. St. Lucia Day was, since it fell during the middle of the week and we still had to go to school, that was Kringla and coffee, which we never got to have coffee except on St. Lucia Day. Kringla and coffee on Mom and Dad's bed.
So the kids had coffee?
Yes, we got to have coffee. And she would wake us up really early with the candles. She didn't do them in the hair. She put them on a platter. She'd come around and wake us up in the dark with this ring of candles. And then usher us all in. She'd been up almost all night making the Kringla and getting it all ready for us.
I was going to say, when you previously kind of were a little bit disparaging about all these traditions you had that were previous to the Day of Christmas, and I've read and heard other people's stories about how important those are, especially the St. Nicholas one. I'm not putting you down there.
I didn't mean it to come off that way.
Well, just somebody mentioned the having a gift before Christmas. Maybe this was in a previous conversation.
He did. No, he mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
he did.
That one family exchanges their family gifts on St. Nicholas Day, and then they have the rest of the time till Christmas to kind of know what it is to receive and anticipate the Christmas, just like that story. And so they've made it a habit to do that exchange early. And they might pick Santa Lucia, or they might pick Little Christmas, which is the 23rd of December, or some other day like that. And St. Nicholas was known as to be a very generous person, and so you can bring that story in, make the connection of where Santa Claus comes from. And
in some cultures, he was a bishop, or an archbishop, and he wears a tiara in the German thing. And so that's a connection.
Yeah.
And it's usually December 6th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have two that have been really meaningful. Like, we always wondered, when should we put up our Christmas tree? Because we kind of wanted to, especially in a pastor's family, not Christmas Eve is not a good time. So we started to make a big deal about the solstice. Like, we put up our Christmas tree that day. We don't necessarily put on all the decorations for the lights, and then that day we don't have any electricity except for the Christmas tree lights and candles, and we found that to be kind of a neat thing to celebrate the solstice. And the other thing about the animals, St. Francis said to feed the animals that day, give them Christmas. So actually last year, this is what we gave to everybody. We made a special birdseed bag out of velvet with stars on it, and then birdseed. And we always go for a hike and feed the birds. It's been meaningful to forests.
And solstice?
No, on Christmas.
And Christmas.
So Christmas hike is, that's a big part of our day, to take a hike and feed the birds. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does anybody know what the Canadian or British tradition of Boxing Day, exactly how that works? How does that fit in? Does that fit into Christian worship at all? Or Christian theme? Because I don't know if that's something to incorporate or to
giving.
It's supposed to be when you give the gifts to the servants. Mm-hmm. You know, if your aristocracy is, that's the day when the servants have to serve you on Christmas, and you give them the day off after. And in fact, the family, you know, the man or family would give the servants whatever presents they're going to give on that day. Why is Boxing Day? I have no idea.
Our friends from Canada celebrate that definitely by giving to the poor and stuff.
I think the Boxing Day comes from the idea that you would box up some of the things, maybe the gifts that you would give it. So to box, not to box.
By the way, when I commented earlier about all the traditions that I grew up with and the simplification, I didn't say it very well, but those are both positive things that I'm trying to combine. And I think all the traditions that I grew up with, most of them are very simple. And I think that they're a good way to simplify Christmas by having these very small Christmases throughout. And also learning about the different cultures out there and how different people have different ideas of what Christmas is. I think where we need to simplify is, you know, the typical marketing Christmas Day type approach, and especially when it just boils down to the family getting together, the women having to do all the cooking, the men watching TV, then eat and go home. There's nothing left.
Well, just like you draw names for gifts sometimes, you can draw names for food and, yeah, and tasks on Christmas Day, mm-hmm, like who's gonna, you know, keep the fireplace going or mm-hmm shovel the walks or something. Everybody has different tasks as well as a person to give. We, one year we did only homemade gifts, which, you know, puts a burden on some folks and is a thrill for others. And it gets real inexpensive for some, and others put elaborate time and energy in. So it's kind of doesn't necessarily really make a clear message. One issue that I'd like some ideas about is the whole issue of travel and gathering family members from distance together. It's not maybe an issue for you Holden folks, because you're here regardless, but for those of us who have relatives traveling, there's a lot of pressure both to make it a good experience for those who come. A lot of, I've heard a lot of people who, you know, don't consider their kids very loving unless they come home for Christmas, kind of like, you know, their family situation got very complicated. And then it's a stressful time with airports. I mean, SeaTac is under major remodeling. They're saying be there 2 hours ahead for a holiday flight and stuff. Anybody have any traveling experiences or ideas that could be helpful?
My family lives from coast to coast. My parents are in Michigan. One of the things that they did to make a Christmas, we don't get together very often, maybe one out of 6 or 7 Christmases we'll all be home.
Okay.
But there was a time, one Christmas, where a good number of us were flying in, and mm-hmm, as a present to us, they said, we're going to arrange all your flights for you.
Oh.
Well, we didn't realize it, but they arranged our flights to, so that we were sitting in the seats next to each other.
Oh.
Some of the earlier, you know, we had the short hops into some place. You get on the plane, you go to sit down, and there's my brother sitting next to me.
Oh,
so then we had the rest.
Oh, how fun.
Unfortunately, one of the airline people at the desk said, well, you don't need to take this high flight over here. We have a direct flight. So one of my siblings missed out on
that. Yeah. Wow. So the work schedules are so varied for some folks. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for some of them.
I'm going to go back to it, something we asked a little bit earlier, which is what a tradition. And, you know, when you have kids that have two homes, it makes it much more complicated. And many kids have two homes. Our kids do. And so I haven't done it as much lately because I don't have them before Christmas. But it's very simple. You just take a baby or a doll and you make a cradle and you put a piece of straw in, everyone does, for something they did for someone else that day, which makes Jesus' bed softer. Mm-hmm. And little ones love it. It's good for adults too. What did I do for someone else today? And then by the time Christmas Eve comes, then you put the baby in, and it's this nice, soft little manger.
And that's just an example of finding things that you can do that are simple in your home in Advent that are preparing and building.
Yeah.
The little ones love the building. I love the building.
Sure.
I love my Advent calendar. I love putting my blue lights on during Advent only so that I can put a few more on next week, and then when it's Christmas, then I put the multicolored ones on. So building things, then keeping them simple.
Yeah. And that kind of stuff, kids, I think it makes that Christmas disappointment of it so much less if you have it kind of spread out.
These travel things are difficult for me. I mean, my family is out all over the country, but based in Wisconsin, and we did that last year. We did all converged, and it worked, but
on the one hand, it was a real burden to my mother because she worried about us all traveling.
Yeah.
You know,
and making connections.
And CTAC and, you know, travel, and even if it's road travel. So some, and I'm going to see my mother this year in January. My birthday's in January. I haven't spent my birthday with her for years. And I know that she will appreciate it much more to have me alone with her there. And we can just have this concentrated time together. So it's okay to kind of consider different options, especially with older people. I think, like when my dad was still living, his hearing was bad, and to have all those people around him just drove him crazy. He loved having them around, and he'd never say it, but it bothered his hearing aid.
Yeah.
So think about, yeah, it's okay to come later, and maybe once every few years do it, but it's the expense and the safety issues, that sort of thing, that is a worry.
I think part of that for us is we always had to do the travel because we were the nomads in the family who moved away. And so it was, we never traveled on Thanksgiving. We never went home at Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was a time with friends. But at Christmas time, it was we have to do this with that family. And I think the greatest gift we've given our children is to let them build their own tradition. And we fit into theirs. So, and they have, like she said, that we have a grandson who has two families. And so what we say is, you tell us when it's going to work for you, and then we'll do that. And the one tradition that our kids have always loved, and so want our grandkids to have, so they kind of work around it, is Christmas Eve we go to midnight service, 11 o'clock service, so that when we come out of church, it's Christmas morning. And baby Jesus is nowhere in the house from the beginning of Advent to, he's hidden somewhere. And the kids used to fight over who would make the birthday cake, because when we come home from church, we have a birthday party, and on top of the birthday cake is the baby Jesus. And they still, to this day, kind of, who's going to do the cake? And our granddaughter is now at an age where she will have that kid to choose to put the baby Jesus on.
Lane, you talked about making homemade gifts. And a few years ago, my sister and brother and my parents and I decided, versus making, sharing something of yourself. And what that sharing was, my dad had spent time in Thailand, and I had never seen his slides growing up. He showed our whole family his slides of Thailand. Mm. And my mother, who's an artist, gave us some watercolor lessons, and I taught my dad how to make bread. And all these were things that we wanted to learn, or had never stopped long enough to say, I really want to know a little bit more about this. And it wasn't for those who maybe to make something homemade was a struggle. There was something where we had to ask and tell what we would like to learn from the other person, and they had to think about what could I share also.
Well, on that, like my mother asked me this year what I wanted for Christmas. I'm going on a big trip in the spring, so she thought I'd need some travel stuff. But really, I have some furniture that belonged to her mother. And I said, my real want is for you to write down or audio tape the stories of those pieces of furniture. I hope I get it.
I said something that I wanted, and I said, why don't you just put all of our gifts into a travel fund and come visit? And
yeah.
It means a lot. I mean, I'd much rather, I know, God knows, we do not need any more things. You start opening your presents, and the first thing you think is, where am I going to put this? It's not a good thing.
Alternative Christmases are catching on across the world, where you buy a toilet from Habitat for Humanity that's going to go into somebody's house, and they will give you a nice new car. Or have a project. There's quite a few that you have a project, you buy something as small as rabbits, which are pretty reasonable, up to cows and such. There's several catalogs along here. I don't have the Heifer catalog, Heifer Project one here, but of things that you can actually buy a gift, but
it's money that's going back to artisans who generally are not paid in often in third world countries that you kind of are giving two gifts and giving that gift. And those are much of the things in that all things carried in the bookstore are those kind of things. But a lot of churches now, and they look in your area, churches will serve, for instance, an organization that supports artisans in third world countries. And, you know, the Episcopalian Church or the Methodist Church or somebody down the street will do a fair trade. And those are great places to get kids. I want to just pass these out. It's an exercise of taking a look at some other things. Things like winter sports. I'm sure Stacy's family's going to have some winter sports that are become some traditions. Or cooking together. A lot of us, you know, my family is baking lefse together, and that's one of the things that we do during holiday time. And those are ways that you can replace holidays. And so this is something to take with you and kind of take a look, you know. Dancing, did your family all go walk the park or something? Kind of replacing some traditions. Okay, on the back of that, there's some blank space.
It's coming in so much, so we want to get that before then.
After sort of thinking about this a little bit now, and you can take this and do this exercise too. A lot of these are out of this book, Unplug the Christmas Machine, and I haven't read many of these books, but this is one that I would really made a big difference in.
And that one is in the store.
Yeah, and that is in the store. And in the library, one of these is a copy of that. But one thing is to think of two or three goals that you have for this Christmas. One thing to be careful of when you're thinking about these goals is to make sure that it's something that you can actually do. They give the example in that book, this woman has an alcoholic husband and she doesn't want him to get drunk on Christmas. Well, that's not a goal. You don't have control. Make sure there are goals that you can do. So, I mean, maybe a goal would be to have less alcohol in the house if you're in charge of the alcohol or something like that. So, two or three realistic goals for your Christmas, simplifying, adding things. And then under those goals, maybe one or two concrete things that you are going to do or you would like to do to work toward that goal. So if you want to think about that for maybe 5 minutes, and then Janet's going to talk a little bit about these resources, so you can do some quiet writing and discuss.
One of the things that I do kind of year-round is kind of mess things up a little bit. I do most of my decoration for Halloween. Mm-hmm. It gives me a chance to do something for the kids that come by, up to about 100. Mm-hmm. This year, I had set up a crane that I was using for work, and I had to move it at about that time, so I got a kind of a cage for working in off this crane. I got together with my neighbor, okay, come over and help me, get me up and get me down. You know, come by sometime, you know, let me down. So here I was 6 feet off the ground with nothing underneath me but lights. And I had a little tube up there that I just dropped. Okay, put your sock up. Okay, I'm on the tube, higher, higher. And what I had was, for some of the kids, the little ones you couldn't do it on, some of them, I have a piece of candy tied on a string with a piece of tape around to hit it. Oh, okay, I got it. And pull up a piece of candy. Or something like that. I've done that kind of stuff instead of doing the Christmas lights all over the country.
some outrageous fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also,
I do a similar thing, Lawrence. I have 15 grand nieces and nephews. I don't need a thing from me, the group from my great aunt. But I try to send, I send them an advent calendar. I send them Halloween card. I send things at different times of the year that that maybe they might not get as much stuff. Because then it's fun for me, because I want to maintain a relationship with those kids or have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And yet, to add one thing to the Christmas stash.
And yeah, remember so that.
What you're saying to me is you want to have a you want to do something fun for the kids and have a relationship with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get comments, what's he doing this year? What's he going to do?
That's right.
Janet, don't you send your holiday greetings at another time?
I do. I send her my birthday in January. I send a birthday letter instead of a Christmas or Advent greetings. And it's great because I don't think about it in December at all when everybody else is like, I'm going to get my Christmas cards out.
It's part of the big Christmas stress.
Gone.
Yeah, because that's one of my biggest stresses. That's a good idea to think of a different time. I mean, that is my hugest stress. Mm-hmm. You respond to everyone too then.
Yeah, because my birthday's a month later, I can respond to things and I enjoy their letters more. I trust that people are ready for one of those form letters now after they've gotten dozens of them at Christmas time. They're ready for another one.
So. What about the internet? Has anybody used that to do anything interesting with family or friends?
Not many.
At Christmas? I mean, you get this humor stuff from people all over the country. Oh, yeah. You know, and that's... But is there anything really unique that's come out that anybody can aware?
I do this throughout the year, but because Todd's family is so spread out, that's the one regular communication form we have. And so I'll write up something humorous that's happened, like when the duck came down the chimney and I had to try and coax it out.
Wow.
Different things from completely. Turned out to be two ducks.
Oh, gosh.
So did you cook their goose?
No, we freed them eventually.
One thing, being at home, and it's been a complete gift to really be able to celebrate both in worship and meals and in community the Advent season together. And I've tried to say what my gift to those that I care about outside of the village who may have never been able to come here or never will come here is a little glimpse of what Advent can be. And so instead of a Christmas letter, the first week of Advent, I try to send something out. And it's very focused on the time of preparing and waiting. And that's one way that I can share this place and how this place has helped me shape Advent with others. And I'm sure there's some people that kind of gloss over that it's an Advent letter, not a Christmas letter.
They just don't pick up on it.
Right. But I try with that. And so in my mind right now, I'm thinking about what I'm sending out next week.
One of the things Stacy did for her dad's birthday this year was turn 50 or something like that, or 56 or something. Yeah. She wrote up 53 things that she remembered about him or cared about him or something like that. That would be something you could do in Advent too for other people. You could do that on the internet, you know.
Yeah, right.
You could do your own kind of Advent family, yeah, personalized, customized thing a day, you know, or remembering a family, yeah, story, or
yeah,
describing that's what the Christmas tree looks like.
You need some kind of structure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to make it interesting.
When I gave that to my dad for his birthday this year, when I was home visiting, he said, but you forgot this and this, and it was like, I was like, that's what you can give back to me. You know, as I listed all these memories of times we've spent together, I said, that's what you can give back to me. And it was just neat to see his mind thinking about things that I haven't thought of.
Another forest who was really visiting this year gave his parents for Christmas a letter a week for the whole year. Mm-hmm. And that,
from his parents' point of view, was about as
a real commitment.
I've done that with my nieces and nephews too, once a month.
Yeah. One other thing, in getting away from the commercial gift buying thing, my siblings and I at some point said, okay, we're not going to give to each other, just the nieces and nephews. And at a point, it seemed like there was something missing, so Santa Claus came up with some gifts for the adults. And it were things that had happened during the year to remind people. And it's been fun just to think about, okay, what happened to this person that? Okay, we can give him this. And it's used stuff. I mean, we're going to get a brick with some graffiti on it this year to a brother-in-law who works as a police officer against graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
What about a family member who had a death of a son? I mean, is it good to recognize that, or I mean, how do you? I mean, I know, or you know, you lose a spouse or something, and so that first year, out.
It's not just the first year.
It goes on and on.
Yeah. 4 years ago, almost to the day, we lost our nephew to an avalanche, and that tore apart my brother's family some years. And it's still very delicate and very touchy, and it's been 4 years now.
But I think the worst, how do we handle that at Christmas?
The problem is we didn't, and I think that is probably the worst thing we could have done. Is with our own family, we talked about it. But when we got together with the bigger family, it was like an unspoken. Oh. And that was the worst thing. I mean, I think it would have been better had we all shared memories of him, mm-hmm. and sat there and wiped out 8 boxes of tissue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But because what's happened is, as that family group is, we're all still grieving because we've not shared that together. And now at this point, how do we go back and do that?
We had a forum in early September here, and it was focused on pain and grief and loss. But something that struck me during that forum is a woman was talking, or maybe it was one of the men, said that they remember every single day the loss of their child, mm-hmm. but no one says that child's name aloud. And so I think maybe in the holidays, even mm-hmm. whether it's a prayer, but that they can hear someone else say their child's name is an important way to, because it's silent, because they're not present, you don't say the name, but it's still very present in the heart.
I think also women that are close to you, if there's been a miscarriage or pregnancy that didn't end with a child, Christmas time is a difficult time because that person is remembering all this child would have been.
Yeah, and that's true for many single people who would yearn to have a child too, and then there's so much focus on being pregnant and delivering. So there's lots of grieving sorts of things. One of the things that I could suggest to you is, you know, now it's what, 3-4 years down the road, even if you sent a book that felt like it addressed some of those issues to the parent or the sibling or something, just say, I'm remembering, and this is a book that helped me, or, you know, that sort of thing. Just to say, I haven't forgotten, and maybe we're not saying the word out loud, maybe we're not able to. I want to get to the place where we can. Mm-hmm. I got a good suggestion of a book.
These different situations that people need to move through remind me that one of the things that I've thought of throughout my life, I've felt that there's a loss of the rite of passage in our mm-hmm. culture. The different rites that existed before were too advanced now to need those anymore. And so I was kind of excited to see a book laying over here called To Celebrate, and it's about the rites of passage, and it even had one in there about divorce, which I wish when I had gone through my divorce that I had that book around. I read it's only a couple pages, but to just have something that acknowledges, yes, rites of passage are very important and we need them, and it listed many of the other things, even down to the first tooth that's lost for a kid. It's a meaningful.
there's, this could go on forever and ever.
It sounds like a pretty book. I only skimmed it.
And you, that's a good segue. There are lots of things here. Many of them are things I've collected over the years, and some of them are ones that I've taken from the bookstore that are available in the bookstore. These, I'd ask that you take. The little advent calendars was free from Lutheran Brotherhood. Take as, if you take them and give it to other people, and it's just one of those ways. We're going to leave these things here until later this afternoon if you'd like to come in and look at them, get some ideas, take some titles down. And then these things that Heidi's put out here from our resource center in particular.
And then this alternatives is a piece that if you wanted a place to get things like which we do have in the bookstore, but those kind of things.
We have a situation where my husband says, "Why pencils? You know, I like to get gifts. If that's the way he was raised, that's how you show love to someone, is you give a gift." And so,
when the kids are talking about simplifying
things,
feels like an attack on him.
It's not. It is. It's just not comfortable for him.
We had a similar last year. Ben decided. We were giving gifts every guest, but Ben decided we were not going to exchange gifts, and I had a problem with that. I was like, you're giving presents to everybody, and I don't care what it is, just let me know that you thought about me a little bit. And I did. That was a good example for Forrest either. We're giving gifts to everybody but each other. But anyway, so he understood that, and we decided, I mean, we really simplified it. We did for each other, but my mom and dad.
I remember we had to use these over and over and over again. Oh. My mother couldn't find them, so we had one.
German dress on. Really nice. But
look, Thomas, look what Heidi got us.
Last June, the Bishop Emeritus rode in the Gay Pride Parade. The mayor rode in the Gay Pride Parade. Do you know what the papers focused on? The radical fairies. They showed five or six men in various costumes and dresses, and this is what they focused on.
And that's
such a small part of our community. What's his name?
Erdal.
Yeah.
Oh, Wo.
Yeah. Wo wrote in the parade and also did the sermon at our church that Sunday morning. Yeah. And no mention of that.
Mm-hmm. In Seattle this year, for the first time, the church contingent in the Gay Pride Parade all walked together, and it was the largest contingent in the Gay Pride Parade, and the media all covered it for the first time. Mm-hmm. In years, and everybody was extremely happy.
I was hearing in a form similar to this that we had last year, someone said that wouldn't it be great one positive way that we could affirm our gay and lesbian brother and bisexual transgender sisters and brothers, that if we could, instead of saying that we're straight, when they come to the point where they can come out and say, "I'm gay," then instead of saying that we're straight, we are glad. And instead of being straight or heterosexual, so whenever they would say, "I'm gay," I would say, "I'm glad." Wouldn't that be easy?
Terminology is important.
Yeah,
straight. You know, what's the opposite of straight? It's crooked.
Exactly.
And that has a bad connotation.
Not good terminology at all, is it?
Yes.
Are you in trouble with this so-called term normal? I have a lot of trouble with that. Because there isn't.
You haven't found it yet.
Normal thing. So-called. You know? Because if you establish standards for normalcy, then you're right off the bat, you're implying you're going to be labeling somebody someplace. Why do we have to label?
Another fact I think everybody agrees on is that we have some really misconstrued ideas originally about what causes homosexuality.
a weak father and a dominating mother was one way to put it. That is completely discredited. There's nobody that believes that. And there's been a lot of research on it, and has really come up with almost nothing. It's an issue that we can't say, well, here's why we have this variety. Instead of that, you know, we have to move ahead on other fronts, and there still is some research into that. And I think with the human genome, there's going to be somebody trying to see where genetic information is encoded that might lead in one direction or another, but it's a very complicated combination of nature and nurture.
Now, there was mention of P-Fly tonight, too, and in the coming out process, it's also coming out for parents and family and friends and having an organization that can give them support, too, that it's a whole road for the person that is confronted with those issues, and so there's a lot of support and help out there for people who are dealing with the issue, and many times they need that because it is a grieving process, and they go through all the five steps, and it's so important to take care of yourself too as a parent or a friend or anyone that has an immediate person in their family.
Of course, the straightening out of the military policy would probably help too, wouldn't it? Isn't it? In the States, it's still the GOP or something?
Yeah.
Don't ask.
There are differences in the candidates. I mean, yeah, contrary to Ralph Nader, there are some differences, mm-hmm. and one of them is George Bush has said, I'm a don't ask, don't tell man. And Gore has said he will actually, again, it's a campaign promise, but he said he will revoke Clinton's don't ask, don't tell, and that he will have full disclosure and that it will be okay to be out and in the military. That's a difference. It's a difference between candidates. It's a big difference.
I was a captain in the Army. And I mean, we're in all kinds of positions. And it was not friendly in the time period I was there. I had an extortion attempt against me. Mm-hmm. And I could have been put to hard labor being an officer for 10, 15, 20 years. But I was fortunate that I was very close to getting out of the Army. Didn't want to be embarrassed. Mm-hmm. So I just barely made it. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. Within your own community, if you really knew people for who they really are, you're in contact with the enlisting people all the time.
Sure.
Well, with our sports mania people, what I think we really need is that the 10%, 8%, or whatever it is, football players would say,
That would be the most helpful thing.
A couple swimmers have said it. Well, male swimmers,
yeah. Right.
And a few female basketball players. Well, female basketball players. But if the figure skating women would say
supermodel.
Yes, or the football
players. Right. Or gymnasts.
The supermodel.
Ladies.
I think one of the funniest
boxers and wrestlers. Then we really... There is something to the whole issue of labeling anything.
Well,
everyone's around the world of money.
And like professional football games, they play We Will Rock You, written by Queen. Freddie Mercury, the leader of Queen, is gay himself. So it's one of the biggest pumped up songs in football. Patrick is the person that Matt was referring to. Patrick was a member of my confirmation class in Bemidji, Minnesota. He was the best confirmation student I've ever had. I've been a pastor 27 years and I knew hundreds and hundreds. He loved confirmation, and that was a shock to me. Most kids hated it. He did extra work for confirmation. He'd send off to some Bible correspondence school and do these lessons and then come in and work them through with me. Patrick showed up in my office saying, I want to confess something. And what he wanted to confess is that he had feelings for males, and that he was wrong, and he wanted to be forgiven, and he wanted to be changed. And this was on our agenda for over a year. We met and talked and met and talked, and basically, you know, to make that long story short, I said, Patrick, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is the church isn't ready for you. See, Patrick wanted to be a pastor, and he would have been a great pastor. But I said, the good news is God loves you. God made you the way you are, and you are very lovable, and I love you too. And Patrick ended up being thrown out of his own home and coming and living in our home with us. So I know him very well. He's like my family in every way. But he was a personal upfront example for me of someone who did not choose his orientation. He tried very hard to unchoose it. He did everything, including confession, to try not to be who he was. But in the end, honesty has to prevail, and you have integrity demands that you accept who you are, and now he's embraced who he is, and he lives in a partnered relationship, and he's doing well, but he'll never be a pastor. And who's the loser? Patrick lost a dream, the church lost a great leader.
I guess I always wonder, in college I was, I think because of my own uncertainties, homophobic, and came to the realization afterwards that two of my very closest long-term friends were both gay. And we're still friends, and so they forgave me. I guess I always still worry about how it is that I not do that ever again to someone, you know. Just by the way I act, or by the things I say, or how I look, or what my body language is. So it's, I know I must know many, many more than that. I just don't know that I know many more than that. And I wonder, you know, is that because I've still got these barriers up, or more, you know. So I think it's why one of the reasons that I want to learn more about how to be human, loving to a gay lesbian.
Perceptions are hard because I have the same problem when I look at a black person. Who do I notice first? The black person. I don't notice that person. And I don't think I call myself a racist either. But it's so ingrained in you as an individual that it really takes effort not to let that become a part of you. And, you know, that every community has just beautiful thing. I'm bored to death living in the white suburbs. You know, I love the diversity of the inner city. I love the gifts that everybody brings to the table. And so many of us never get to experience that because sometimes we just don't have it available to us, but we don't seek it either. And it's comfortable not to be challenged.
I wish those verses in the Bible that seemed so black and white sometimes just weren't there.
Yeah.
Because
that's where the arguments always start. And you can go through the issue of saying, well, yes, there's the divorce thing and we're accepting and all that, but what, in those times, do they have a different view of homosexuality?
The idea of sexual orientation is very new in the whole sweep of human history. The idea that people are sometimes oriented in one direction or sometimes in a different direction is only about 100 years old. And so if you read in a Bible and they use the word homosexual or homosexuality, that is not from the original languages of the Bible, the Hebrew and the Greek. That is from a translator. You know, there's been many different issues of the Bible, different translations, who thought that's what they were referring to, but it is writing into the text a very modern idea. The Bible didn't deal with that notion that people are sometimes oriented this way and sometimes oriented in the opposite direction. The Bible didn't deal with that. And what's distressing is people that lift up a couple passages from Leviticus and so forth, it's like so clear to me that they're seeking biblical grounding for opinions that they have been shaped by society already. They're not going to the Bible as an open person trying to see what the Bible says, but they feel it. Because so often to me, these are people that don't really know the Bible. They just can lead you to certain passages. They don't, because when you really know the Bible, what's the overwhelming message? How many times are we invited to love? I mean, it's a 200 or 300 to 1 in terms of these passages which they take as an invitation to discriminate. So the overwhelming preponderance of the Bible is not to discriminate against people on any basis. But those passages are there, and like I say, previously there was an assortment of passages that people said, you look at, God wants women to stay home and to cook and clean, and this proves it, you know. And there was, 100 years ago, there are churches having debates about God wanting people to have slaves. That's part of the natural order of things. And, you know, in the Middle Ages, there was people that quoted the Bible to say we have to have a crusade and go down to the Holy Land and kill those Turks and take the land back for the church. You know, and so it's very easy to misread the Bible and to read into the Bible the current cultural assumptions.
Well, even the Romans, that Romans chapter that they're always quoting, they're really talking about those Romans that were doing everything. I mean, if it wasn't, they were full of greed, they were full of lust, they were full of whatever. It was the passionate being that was being complained in the Romans. And even in Spartan society, those boys had a 7 to 14-year-old time period of their lives in which really their responsibility was a non-passionate love, homosexual in thinking of these boy Spartans, the female Spartans, the same thing. While the Greeks, on the other hand, had this loving kind of maleness to maleness relationship. And we never really look at the Greeks who had this love, and not Christian love, but a love relationship with men with men, and the women in the upstairs with women, and all sorts of this, what is normacy. But we just are completely afraid to look at it. And really, I'm most interested in it because of what it's done to women in sport. And my friends are very, very capable athletic directors, but they can't get the job because the murmuring is, oh, we can't hire her at the University of Maine. She's a lesbian, you know. Doesn't matter that she's not, or that she is. I mean, you know, they've got some pretty good men running intercollegiate athletics, and they're gay as they can be.
And they're doing a great job, but nobody knows.
Yes.
But in athletics, women have had the worst out because of labeling women lesbians. So the real lesbians don't have a chance in hell of getting any kind of great position.
I need to cut us off, and I encourage you to go into the dining hall and have other conversations, but Compline, which is our evening prayer service, right, begins in here in 3 minutes.
Okay.
In here, which is an evening prayer service that you're welcome to take part in. It's a 10 to 15 minute lullaby of sorts. And...